You're listening to Truth Quest with Melody on KHENLPFM Radio 106.9 Salida, Colorado. And as usual, I always have some kind of goof up before I get started. But I've got a special guest tonight, and we're going to call him Lark. And he's from Texas. And my co-host this evening is Katie O'Brien. Katie and Lark, are you there? Katie? Katie, did we lose her again? I think we did. I think I'll have to go ahead and try another song and see if I can get her back on the air here. It's one of those days when you just don't do anything right. So if you hold on, I will try to get this going again just a second.
We are streaming
and
on the internet.
Lark, go ahead and hang up, and I'll call you again.
Okay.
And if you would like to listen to tonight's program or any past programs of Truth Quest with Melody, they're available at www.gimmesometruth.info or linked from the khen.org website. And if you would like to send an email into the program for questions with our guest, our email address is khen.dj@gmail.com. You've been listening to Truth Quest with Melody on KHEN-LPFM Radio, 106.9, Salida, Colorado, community-supported radio. We are streamed on the Internet at khen.org, and if you would like to listen to tonight's program or any of the past programs of Truth Quest with Melody, they are available at www.givemesometruth.info are linked from the khen.org website. Good night.
It's New Year's Eve. I'm gonna stay home. Skip the amateur revelry. You know I'd rather be alone. Take some time to reflect on the year gone past. Seems the older I get, they go twice as fast. 2007, a good year back. Lost and Fogelberg, Kurt Vonnegut. My mom lost her sisters, two of the world's greatest aunts. Always good for a listen, always good for a laugh. And so it is, so it goes. Rain comes down.
Okay, now I should have my two guests, Katie and Lark. You're both there now?
I'm here.
I'm here as well.
Okay. Oh, I've only been doing this for 3 years and I still can't do it right.
Well, tonight it was not your turn, I guess.
Yeah, but last time there was... My brother was telling me one time, he listened to one program I did, and he says, oh, nothing went wrong.
Are we on air?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
So Lark, you're from Texas, and I'd like you to kind of explain to our audience your background and a little bit of how we became acquainted and why... You know, I think it's very appropriate that we kind of get into your interests and why, and also I'll mention why I find that your background and where we did meet makes it very apropos for this kind of program. So if you'll just kind of fill my audience in, you were on last week with Nikki Rapana, but I kind of wanted to visit with you on your own and let our audience see... your uniqueness.
Well,
that'll make you feel real good, won't it?
Well, that's very nice of you to say, but I rather think that probably you and Katie are at least as unique. But just to start things off, the only label I wear is really an American. In fact, I only got online in 2004, and that was reluctantly. I don't really like technology too much. In fact, I don't even really like machines. I put up with them because it seems the whole world has gone crazy and must have them. But I do enjoy talk radio, and so I, within the last 8 or 9 months, I've been a frequent call-in guest to different radio shows because I enjoy talking to just regular people, having real conversations, and it seems to me to be the forward edge of media, and really one of the few ways that real Americans can speak candidly with each other anymore. Didn't you rather feel the same?
Oh, I still call into numerous programs.
Well, at first it was a wonderful novelty because I thought, oh gosh, someone's actually going to take my call, and it's not like calling one of those AM radio stations that I used to listen to driving down the highway. I didn't have to talk to Rush Limbaugh, you know, or somebody like that. And, you know, Americans are a fascinating lot. We really are. I think all of us have tales to tell. I used to tell people that with the right editor, I think I could make anybody famous. Does not matter who it is. Just by telling their life story and putting some kind of a spin on it that would relate to other people, no matter who they were. So that's kind of how I view myself. Nobody special, nobody important, just somebody that's interested in a lot of things. I have to admit I'm a bit concerned about what's happening in America.
Well,
share
with us the reshaping history about getting conservatives to care about community.
Well, wait a minute before he... I really do want him to get a little bit into his background before he gets into that, Katie.
Okay.
Okay, and I, the reason being that, I mean, it doesn't take anybody special to really start getting concerned like you're talking about and taking part. And you came from a different background, and then you just started calling into radio programs. And then I did, and then I heard you, and I asked you to come on mine because, that's what I was doing before I was able to start doing my own radio program. So,
well, what might be useful, Melody, Katie, and for your audience is that I grew up as an Air Force brat, and I lived all over the United States. I lived in Japan. I went to 17 different schools before I finished high school. So I was always that new guy. And besides that, I was a towhead with freckles. And you know, people with freckles are very sensitive. So every time I was the new kid introduced to the class, I would get beat red. Because I was a little bit shy, at least at first. And so, I always had to be the new guy in just about every situation I was ever in. As far as politics is concerned, I never really gave it a lot of thought, to be honest with you. I think I tried to think I was a responsible citizen. I voted, tried to assess the issues. But believe it or not, and people are surprised today, most of my life I thought of myself as liberal, because in my eyes that was liberal-minded. And I always thought I was progressive, because after all, I didn't think that we as a society need to regress. And it really wasn't until just a few years ago that I started thinking that, you know something, we have gotten a little bit too far off on the left side of the equation here. And then I came to find out that, well, no, we're really just as far off on the right side of the equation as we always were. It's just now worse for us people in the middle, ordinary Americans. And that's when I kind of stumbled across communitarianism 4 or 5 years ago and realized that all of us were being led around like herd animals.
Okay, but you also, before you discovered that, you spent your life as a chef, and then you had a business on the side related to the chefing.
Oh, yeah. I've always liked all people. And the reason I liked all people was because I loved all cuisines. I fell in love with cuisine. And when I say cuisine, I mean haute cuisine. I mean the fuel for people. And I've studied all aspects of food as it relates to physiology, agriculture. I mean, that was the main thrust of everything I wanted to learn, to be, and to do in life for at least 20 of my years. I used to joke with people that everything I ever needed to learn about economics, I learned when I was about 9 years old. Because I lived in a lower middle class shopping center, suburban neighborhood. My father was a tech sergeant, and yet my mother always worked like in civil service or in advertising or something like that. She was quite talented. And so we were always able to live in a better house, if you will, or a better neighborhood than a typical Air Force sergeant, if that makes sense. But in this particular neighborhood, when I was 9, we had something called Shady Grove on one side, and we had Pecan Park on the other, and in the middle where our family lived was called Bel Air, which was carved from a cotton plantation. Whereas Shady Grove and Pecan Park were carved out, now these are housing subdivisions, were carved out of 100-year-old pecan plantations. And every year, all the ladies would have to buy pecans, even though most of the people had a pecan tree in their yard. I thought, something's wrong with this picture. The ladies wouldn't eat the pecans in their own yards because of all the poisons that were sprayed on them. And I thought, this is nuts. We are surrounded by poisons.
Is that a pun?
I'm sorry?
I said, was that a pun when you said, this is nuts?
Oh, yeah. Maybe I didn't realize it, but no. In any event, so what I did is I went to a fallow part of the orchard that was not developed, this 100-year-old plantation. And my younger brother and I, we picked up pecans, and we sorted them, and we put them in little brown paper bags, and we got a magic marker and wrote a quarter on them, 25 cents. And we sold them door-to-door like hotcakes. So here I am at 9 years old, my brother 8, and we are getting rich selling these pecans, and we're selling them to all these stupid people that have pecan trees in their own yards. Of course, we all know that probably the people were charmed by these two freckle-faced little boys selling them pecans door-to-door. At a time in America where the only people that went door-to-door were either trying to sell you a vacuum cleaner or a Bible.
So essentially, what you're saying is that you already had a propensity for, you know, selling and making money, and then you decided to go into the chefing, and then you went into the restaurant equipment sales?
Yes, I should insert this aspect, though. I never really liked sales. In fact, I never had a whole lot of respect for people in it. I never met my real father till I was 20, and it turns out that he was a super salesman, Napoleon Hill type.
Oh,
yeah. He was a bona fide multimillionaire. Met him for the first time when I was 20. It was my stepfather, the one in the Air Force, that raised me from the age of 5. My brother, 4. My sister, 3. And of course, I was influenced by things like Death of a Salesman and Our Town, Thornton Wilder. Things like that. It made me think that there was more to life than just buying and selling.
That is.
And so I wanted to be an artist. And I wanted to be a poet. And I wanted to be a dreamer. And I wanted to be a gadfly. Everything except be involved in business. It wasn't until after I spent 20 years working in the culinary field that I stumbled upon the sales of food service equipment, and for which I was fairly successful over about 12 years. Been out of it now since about 2006. So I hope that was helpful.
Right, but now, in that time, you were probably used to being a pretty busy person, correct?
Well, you know, when you're, you know, no matter what you do nowadays, you have to sell yourself, it seems. And so I guess you could say I was practiced in the art of selling myself, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
You have to sell your ideas. You have to sell yourself as a person. You have to sell your vision. Every person has to do this. And, of course, along the way, you learn various aspects of salesmanship that will garner you the most success, I think.
Okay, but so you have this career, the two careers here that have been, you know, supported you, whether you were, whether anybody's ever as successful as they wanted to be, but then you changed. Why are you doing what you're doing now as opposed to staying in that business? What is it that took place?
Well, I decided that I needed to turn my attention to discovering a model for how it is that Americans can regain their independence. In a nutshell, pun intended. And so that's what I've been working on. I have been trying to determine how it is an ordinary person can actually gain back their independence, because I don't think that America, as we know it, really ever was free. We talk about the Declaration of Independence, but I don't believe, based on my research, that America was ever free.
Okay, so in other words, you're saying that you were able to turn your sights to looking at that sort of thing, where you probably hadn't been doing that, or had you been studying about that and paying attention to that all along?
Well, I mean, I think like a lot of people, Melody, I've had nagging questions all my life. And I suspected things were amiss. Something was not right. The rhetoric, the propaganda, things we read, what was directed that we read when we were in school, even at the university level, things seemed amiss. Something was up. And I think there's a lot of people that had that nagging feeling. And I think I was no different. And really, it wasn't until I got on a computer that I thought, my goodness, I've got the whole world's resources at my fingertips, at least as compared to what my life had been before, even though I have always been an avid reader all my life, and I have a sizable library today. Nothing compares to the Internet in terms of access to information, quantity of information and so forth. And so I was so overwhelmed at first, but rather beguiled too by the whole idea of having all of this information, and I was like a kid in a candy store. And I just simply wanted to connect some dots. So in that regard, I have always thought myself an autodidact, or a person who was self-motivated to learn. I didn't need a master to tell me something unless I sought that master out. And I've also had the attitude that I really don't have any beliefs. I'm a non-believer in beliefs. And so, too, I realize that people always tend to slant things. We're tyrannized by words. Words betray us. Words act as swords, just as much as they can be useful. Swords can be turned upon yourself. They can be used against other people. Words are the same way. And so I asked myself, does truth really even exist? Does something that we call freedom even exist? And those are the types of things that I was wanting to discover.
Now, Katie, does that fit in with the question? Does that kind of segue at all for you, or...
Well, he did get into some of the communityism. Is
communitarianism.
That
communitarianism.
Communitarianism.
Katie, communitarianism is one ism that all Americans today need to become at least somewhat familiar with, because for the last 25 or 30 years, since the early 90s, it, in fact, is the body of law which governs America and also rules the world. It has supposedly balanced American constitutional law, but in truth, it has superseded American constitutional law. And Americans are not going to be told this straight out. They're never going to hear it in the mainstream press. They'll never read it in a newspaper.
And
you have to dig for these things.
And this communitarianism came out of one of the founding fathers, John Adams?
No, that whole article is a classic example of historical revisionism. The author of that piece that I forwarded to you and to Melody.
And that was Getting Conservatives to Care About Community, was the name of the article.
Yeah, now this is a so-called neoconservative website. The gentleman's name is Frum, F-R-U-M. He's quite prominent, I believe, during the Bush administration, Bush 1 and Bush 2. And he's representative of the so-called neoconservative voice in America today. And for me, it's all propaganda. If you click on the author, his name on that article, you'll see the image of a fresh-faced college graduate in his 20s, practically a baby. We say these things when we get older. pardon any 20-somethings out there. We were all 20-something at one time.
Was it influenced at all by any of the Jefferson thoughts?
No, not at all.
This
is completely a propaganda piece. It's a propaganda piece all the way. But you'll find the same kind of propaganda all over the Internet. And it's used more skillfully within the mainstream press. And for the reason is that, first of all, it's important to remember that they always substitute the word communitarian for community. So by simply using that word community, this is in fact really just a code word for communitarian 99% of the time. And communitarianism is really briefly, corporatism, or what we used to call fascism, and communism, and socialism, all combined into one.
Does collectivism fit in there?
Absolutely. Because communitarians are not concerned with your individual rights. In fact, they don't agree that you have any rights or that you were born with any rights. They also deny that you can receive rights or be granted rights by a so-called creator. And so they deny the existence of a creator that would grant you as a person any rights. They hate nationalism. Why? Because these people are internationalist. They want a one-world government. And they're serving their paymasters who are in support of their paymasters who want a one-world government.
Okay.
And all of this, pardon me?
Well, okay, now we had, of course, discussed some of this quite a bit with our interview last week with Nikki Rapana, but how did you get tuned into seeing that this is going on? I mean, did it happen all at once, or is this taking you a lot of study to kind of get to this point? Or,
well, you can never stop learning in this life. And we all know that. But for me, as I said, I stumbled on this 4 or 5 years ago. And I know that I was involved in a presidential election campaign for the first time in my life, with the Ron Paul campaign, for instance, just to cite an example of what I was up against. Anyway, since I was privy to this information, having learned most of it online, I tried to disseminate this information to thousands of Ron Paul supporters here just in North Texas and anywhere else. I was an avid blogger. I edited the Dallas for Ron Paul blog. I donated 5 billboards to the campaign. So, I mean, I was an activist, if you will. Ron Paul was the first presidential candidate I'd ever heard in my lifetime that was saying something different. And I had become rather accustomed, like most people, just to simply voting for the lesser of two evils. I know my own parents, both of my parents growing up, habitually voted Democrat or Republican. They would go either way, election year after election year. And they were both very caught up in local elections and so forth and so on, whereas I never really have been interested. Mostly because I never felt rooted to any one quote-unquote community. So how did I discover it, and how can anybody else discover it? I can probably cite a few links, some keywords if you'd like, if that would be useful for anybody that might be interested in this topic, because it's an important topic. Communitarian law emanates from the supremacy of communitarian law, which is nothing more than a contract clause. And it's enforced by the United Nations, especially at the International Court at The Hague. So it's an international law. And because it's a contract clause, what that means is when you have multinational corporations doing business all over the world, there had to be one law which governed any kind of conflict, contract disagreements, etc. And so this kind of law was worked out over many a year. One thing it's important to note is that in 1974, the U.S. was a signatory to the United Nations Declaration of a new international financial order in 1976, 2 years
now,
later.
What was that, though?
Well, it was a blueprint disseminated through the United Nations organizations, for, I remember this was not long after Nixon took us off the gold standard. So the intent has been in the planning, or been in the works for a long time, to place this under one international financial order. And the higher-ups in our government have known this since 1974. You know, prior to that, we also need to realize that in 1946, we had in this country, we got the Administrative Procedures Act. And this, in fact, overlaid a fourth unconstitutional branch of government over everybody in the United States. And then this is where we got code enforcements, new statutes, new rules, all these different agencies that have mushroomed since the FDR administration. And these agencies are the ones that actually touch our lives, more so than the Congress in Washington, and very often more so than the legislatures in our state capitals. In 1976, we had a so-called Declaration of Interdependence. The U.S. was a signatory. Americans weren't told about these things. In fact, all of our lives, we have not been told purposefully and deliberately that, yes, you're being enslaved, and since you don't really have the right to know anyway, and probably because you just wouldn't understand, you're just not enlightened or really even bright enough to know about these things. We really don't want to hurt your feelings either. But yes, we're going to enslave you. And this is all by design. And bear in mind, they're not going to use nasty words like slavery. No, no. They're going to use all kinds of legalese, mumbo-jumbo, the same kind of mumbo-jumbo that scientists and doctors and lawyers use to discombobulate you, to confound you, to make you believe that, oh, you really need them because you'll just never get it. We're talking specialized knowledge and coded language, words which you think mean one thing, phrases and clauses and sentences which you think mean one thing, but really, placed in a larger context, mean quite something else. And this is how they've been able to enslave us. If you imagine yourself a cow in a herd of other cows, you're simply not going to know of the ultimate design of the cowboys or the rancher who has plans for your life that you didn't assign that cowboy or that rancher. But nevertheless, these are the plans for you. So this is what I've come to the knowledge of. Communitarianism is really a fancy schmancy way of saying that we're entering in a time of scientific dictatorship. And everything that you know or will eventually know is going to be on a need-to-know basis. Why? Because you're not thought of as even really human. You're, in fact, less than human. And you may not have even a soul. You most certainly were not endowed with free will, at least according to these men who deign to rule us. And that's the reality. That's the reality. And that's why the study of communitarian law and communitarianism is so important. Forgive me for...
So,
go ahead. How would it be possible to turn this around?
We have to get educated. We must get educated.
Oh, that thing they just keep charging money for.
You don't have to pay to get educated. That's all a canard. Nobody has to pay to get educated.
I think it costs on a lot of levels that people don't have, like time. But education is a great place to start.
Education is a lifelong learning process. When I studied marketing and branding and memetics and public relations, I didn't have a teacher. I had many teachers, many, many teachers. And I did it of my own volition, in my own time, and I did it because I was motivated simply to want to know. I didn't want to be in the dark. I wanted to become better informed. If you don't have that, if you don't have even the will to be better informed, then you simply must accept your fate within the living in a world where there are many, many people who would deign to rule you. And let's face it, we know how people are. When people, individuals consider themselves smarter or brighter or prettier or more handsome, you know, these are not, these are not really good things. Now, I know that I've had these types of feelings in my mind, in my heart, over the years, but I've always at least felt I had a conscience, and I instinctively knew that this was a wrong way to think, ever. And yet, we have people in our society that are indoctrinated, that if they don't think this way, they will never be part of this management class, this ownership class, within society at large. I wholeheartedly, profoundly disagree with that. And so most of my work today centers on how we can beat these bastards, quote unquote, pardon my French. And the only way I know to do it is that we have to drill down and decide, first of all, do we want to be independent? An independent person has the option always to be codependent and or interdependent. But he or she always retains the option to be independent. And we must explore what that word independent actually and truly means. Once again, because we've lost it in America. We truly have. I know this in my own life. I know this, all these things I questioned as I was growing up. I should have, if I was in control of my own life and I was independent, I would have done something about it. It didn't have to be violent. It didn't have to be mean-spirited. You simply chart your own course. Chart your own course. And so, if we want to be, you know, one time self-reliance, self-sufficiency, these things were huge in the psyches of Americans. We look back to the writings of Thoreau and Emerson. These are classic Americans. One of my favorite websites is Strike the Root. For the many hacking at the branches of evil, there is one striking at the root. And I think Americans today have been indoctrinated to think that community is important. In other words, you have to give up something of yourself so that you can coalesce, homogenize with the community. And I don't think the people that want to be independent want to be mean and be packing a pistol everywhere they go. This is not what it means. It's an independence of spirit, it's an independence of heart, and it's a refusal to be indoctrinated to the herds, to a mob mentality's vision against your own. In fact, I think that communitarianism breeds what I like to call arrested development. Every human being is important. Every human being. They have much to give. When someone tries to tell me they're an expert, I take it with a grain of salt. I grant them that status that they've granted themselves, or somebody else granted to them. But it doesn't mean that they ever will supersede the expert that is me. I'm the final arbiter for what I do with my life. Rightly or wrongly, I must be responsible for the consequences of my actions. But the final authority for my actions is me. It's me. And this is the spirit of independence. Did I sound mean saying that? Because I'm hardly a meanie. I'm not dangerous just to even look at.
Well, one of the things that you're kind of bringing up, because I mean, it seems like we're going through our whole life getting two different messages, a minimum of two different messages, and one is about the independence part, and the other part is about the fitting in part, and being able to balance that and be a productive part of the community, but at the same time be allowed to be the individual that really should be allowed to blossom is not an easy task, particularly when you're indoctrinated. And that's what I feel like is the...
Well, Melody, I don't think anybody purposely wants to stick out like a sore thumb, go against the grain, draw attention to themselves, negative aspersions cast upon them. I think this is just, we naturally adapt. That's the nature of all living things, is we naturally adapt. But what we have to reclaim for ourselves is, because we do have free will, we are a different kind of an animal than the other animals on this planet, after all. It doesn't mean that we're better. It means that we have been imbued with something that's innate, which is part of our inheritance. It's of our intuition, of our instinct, and our natural intellect. And it is our free will. It is our free will. When we deny our free will and we subsume it to the dictates of the community, to the mob, constantly, over time, we lose it because we find ourselves constantly compromising and getting into this herd mentality because we kind of want to just go along to get along and all these other things. And now all of a sudden, we're really not in charge of our lives anymore. We're not in charge. And those old dreams that we had when we were bright children, thinking about our possibilities for the future, we give up on those dreams. We become jaded. We become what the transhumanists want us to be. They don't want us to be human anymore. They just want us to do what we're told. And we've got to rail against that. It can only be brought about by examining your own motives for what it is you want to do with your life and your purposes. I've boiled it down to just four words that are important. If you draw a circle, imagine that as the biosphere or the universe. And then draw a stick man right in the center of that circle. This is you. And you have the free will and the skill and the intellect to produce your own words that are important to you around there. Because words, after all, they are the code bits of information that drive our actions as psychophysical beings. And for me, those words are well-being, well-being. Man is a human of the soil, but he is also a being, a being. If you study that word is, are, be, to be, and you really look hard at it and you realize that this has a whole lot to do with our relationship with the universe, and it's even spiritual. However we want to describe that word spiritual, we are a higher order of being. So we are concerned with our well-being as human beings. The other word is economy. Economy is nothing more than the actions that spring forth from your own thoughts, from those same code bits of information we call words. And words themselves are really nothing more than letters and signs and symbols and numbers and sounds, perceptions, feelings, smells, all those things that we derive from our senses as sentient beings to describe the world around us. They're oftentimes those same signs and symbols that we were indoctrinated to. After all, most of us were indoctrinated to learning a language, presumably so that we can communicate effectively. And so again, economy is nothing more than our actions that we take that are a result of the thoughts. And then we have energy is an important word. Because energy is all around us. It's within us. And so what we want to do is we want to employ these words, useful ways that make sense to us, so that we can actually construct the foundation and a pathway for living our lives. The final word for me is really three words. Mind, spirit, and matter. Because based on the science of today, in truth, we don't know what matter is. When we describe something as nothing, we must understand that even nothing is something. If that sounds confusing, I apologize. But, you know, nature abhors a vacuum. Every time you think there is nothing there, in other words, it's not material, that simply means that it has eluded your thought, your consciousness, your experience. But it's all out there. Interestingly enough, that word well-being, at one time a man was considered wealthy if he had access to his own well, from which he could draw water. Now this is how I start to assign values to these different words. And, you know, we are first and foremost concerned with our survival. We're concerned with our prosperity. We're concerned with our wealth, our wellness, our access to potable water in a well. And we're concerned about our health. All of these, to me, spring from the same etymological roots as well and well-being. So everything concerned with well-being is concerned with how we secure shelter for ourselves, how it is that we have or secure our access to food and potable water and clean, breathable air. Because after all, we're alive, and we want to live. It's part of our nature. We can't escape that if we're healthy.
So, I mean, we kind of need to bring this to a close.
I apologize for talking so much,
no, well,
Katie.
No, but
no, you were supposed to. That's what you were supposed to do.
Oh, is that what I was supposed
yeah.
to do? I was supposed to. Listen, I can always fill hot air. I can promise you.
What I'm kind of trying to bring it all together. If you can bring it all together between why you hit these two subjects, and then we kind of do got to bring it to a close, and it does sound like it, the individual is the one that, I mean, we've got to find our own individuality and find out who we are, and then be able to find out what we can, I mean, educate ourselves so that we can deal with a change of government, and is that okay with us? Is that kind of what you're saying, or did I?
Well, first of all, I'd like to know if I at least touched upon anything valuable regarding communitarianism for Katie.
Katie?
Yes, you did. I'm sorry.
Because I didn't
get that was a question, but no, you did very well, and I think
I wasn't sure you. I wasn't sure you were familiar with that word. That's why I asked.
Yeah, and I wanted also our listeners to know what it meant.
Well,
too.
Very good. Yeah, I recommend that you and your listeners really check out Nikki's website. It's really where I got a lot of my first understanding of what these terms mean and how and why they're important.
And what is that website?
Her website. Just do a search online for Anti-Communitarian League. Alternate keywords appropriate for Nikki's work would be Anti-Communitarian Manifesto.
Okay.
And then finally, Living Outside the Dialectic. Now, the wonderful thing about Nikki's work is Nikki puts it in layperson's language. She takes that airy-fairy, weird language from academia and puts it into her words.
Okay.
And that's very useful because the only other information you're going to find online is either the propaganda, which I cited with this article, or something from academia in some textbook somewhere or some professor. Mm-hmm. And remember, they're all on board with this stuff.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing your information with us.
Yeah, again.
Well,
and
thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks again, Lark, for coming on the short notice and being patient with me getting it together again. Some days and a lot of days. And again, thanks. And we'll have to have you back again. So we can get into the memetics and the words. I mean, they really are important. And communitarianism is definitely a word that I think that a lot of people are not familiar with, and along with many others that have been changed or in their meaning evolved or whatever you want to call it. So, again,
well, this is solid information about what's going on in the world, and I really hope this has been helpful. I've tried to be helpful.
Okay.
And heck, next time I hope I can hear more from you and Katie.
Okay, well, again, we're going to say goodnight, and I'm going to go ahead and hang both of you up so that I can get our other guests back on, and we'll go ahead and continue.
Thanks,
on
Mark.
Good night.
Yeah, good night, Katie.
Good night.
Good night, Melody.
Good night.